It's showtime.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this sixth day of April, 2023. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday here at the Horn today. And, well, if you're listening live, the usual stuff applies. Namely, augment your listening experience by running on over to headon.live. Click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password if you never have before, and become part of the Merry Wacky Zany real-time madcap multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room in these 3 live hours during the day. 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. And if you do so, you will be greeted by early arrivers Theo and Squeaky and Irish Dave and Anatole, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third-stage guild navigator, has found it to be a lovely day for folding space, and he is instead man-caved. And he is assisted by his colleague, Horn Chief Agronomist and Chief Mathematician and Bud Trimmer Emeritus, Roger, in Oregon.
Hi, I'm Robin.
And another reminder, since we did it, if you want to reach the program via Skype now, instead of the old Skype contact under the old name, it's now Robin, R-O-B-Y-N, separate word, Kincaid Horn, capital K-I-N-C-A-I-D, capital H, capital O, capital R, capital N. And that'll get you right into the Skype group. Thank you very kindly, Brother Deacon Asa. I have our traditional photograph of Herb Kane to let me know that the packets are passing. I am, in fact, recording. Brother Deacon Asa is recording the backup stream. And so, hopefully, that was last Friday that I screwed everything up. Yes. And by the way, since we're at the front end of the program, if you listen to the podcast, please, please, pretty please, like and subscribe. Leave a comment, and if you listen on, if you're listening on, and that's whatever platform you're listening on, and if you're listening on TuneIn, hit that heart button, and maybe at some point we'll get up to 1,000 listeners just at TuneIn alone. I think that would be wonderful. I mean, those aren't Joe Rogaine numbers, but then again, I'm not stupid pink and bald, just pink, right? So that's really very helpful. And every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude. This program is no different, of course. And so that means we say thank you to our sixth day of the month subscribers. Namely, thank you to Charlene in Rogues Island. Thank you to Michael, formerly of Madison, now Chicago. Thank you to John. And thank you to our buddy Don in West Tennistan. And thanks again for the challenge yesterday, Kat in Ohio. Thank you. Thank you, Cecilia. Much appreciated. And thanks very kindly to Stephen. Thank you, Stephen. That was very kind of you indeed. So the fundraising goal, rather than 760, is down to 660. Maybe. Sure would be fun if it was 666, wouldn't it? But that's where we stand, 660. And we'll see how far we can get with that during the course of the program. It is a thorn in the side Thursday, beyond a shadow of a doubt. We should probably begin in Tennistan, where the maggots have voted to expel one of three Democrats who had the audacity, the temerity, the unmitigated gall to put children's lives before the fetishes and fantasies of pasty-faced, doughy gun humpers. The debates have been pretty much going on all day long. I watched some of them earlier. The Democrats are handling themselves with grace and dignity and aplomb and righteous indignation. And so they have voted to expel Representative Justin Jones, who is a representative for Davidson County, the part of Metro Nashville. And they are doing so because he offended their guns. It has nothing to do with decorum or the honor of the house. This is just a bunch of nasty-ass old racists, mostly white men, all white, mostly men, having a butthurt hissy over the fact that their bloodlust was called out, and that thousands of children who will someday be voters got to see them doing their dirty business. It was 72-25 to expel Justin Jones from the House. And they too will be, Justin Pearson and Gloria Johnson will also face votes to expel them. The state capitol in Nashville has been, descended upon by outraged Tennesseans, you know, the decent kind, not the kinds that vote for Republicans. And they did it nonetheless. Prior to the vote on his expulsion, Justin Jones said, "There comes a time when people get sick and tired of being sick and tired." And so, my colleagues, I say that what we did was act in our responsibility as legislators to serve and give voice, to the grievances of people who have been silenced. We called for you all to ban assault weapons, and you respond with an assault on democracy. And then he gave the knife a real good twist. How can you bring dishonor to an already dishonorable house? And of course, he pointed out that the reason he used his little mini bullhorn
was because the speaker was improperly cutting off people's microphones because he didn't want to hear their cries for justice. And during the time that I was watching the so-called debate, this was a legislative lynching. That's all it was. I found tremendous irony in the fact that one of the mush-mouthed, white, southern, cisgender, presumptively heterosexual, Christian Tennessee men inquired of Justin Jones, how in the world did you get that there bullhorn into the Capitol and right here into the House of Representatives? Did you sneak it in the dark and still of the night? Dude exhibited more concern about a bullhorn than that entire majority has exhibited about the fact that it's absolutely legal in Tennistan to walk around with a weapon of war with 100 rounds of ammunition in it on the streets of Nashville or Knoxville or Memphis or bumfuck Tennessee. It matters not. It's legal. Because freedom! And so there will be more gun violence. And 70,000 people in Davidson County are now disenfranchised. They have no voice and no representation in the House. And that's just the way the Republicans like it, because, you know, Tennessee is not just a blood red place. No maggot state is. There are pockets of decency and non-maggotry, non-republicanism. And that district is one of them. And so with a 72-25 vote, they have silenced that pocket of decency in the greater Nashville metro area. Justin Jones was on CNN this morning. And he said, it's morally insane that a week after a mass shooting took six precious lives in my community here in Nashville, my colleagues on the other side of the aisle, their first action is not to take action to rein in this proliferation of weapons of war in our streets, but it's to expel their colleagues for standing with our constituents. This is not just about losing my job. My constituents are being taken and silenced by a party that is acting like authoritarians. Well, to be kind, Representative Jones, they're not acting like authoritarians. They are authoritarians. They're fascists. When fascism comes to America, it will be wrapped in the flag and carrying a cross. That is who they are. Over the course of 157 years, only two other times of it has anyone been expelled from the Tennistan House. One was in 1980. A member of the House was found guilty of accepting a bribe in office, so they bounced him. And then another one was expelled in 2016 over allegations of sexual harassment. This was certainly neither of those instances. It wasn't even a law violation. It was nominally a violation of a rule of the House. Because as the Speaker of the House, one Cameron Sexton, a maggot, of course, said, their actions are and always will be unacceptable. And they done broke several rules of decorum and procedure on the House floor. On the other hand, if a maggot stepped onto the house floor, dropped his pants, and started playing with his little thing, they wouldn't throw him out for that. Yeah, he was tweeting on Monday. Cameron Sexton was. In effect, those actions took away the voices of the protesters. The focus on the six victims who lost their lives and the families who lost their loved ones. Cameron Sexton doesn't give a good goddamn about those victims or their families. Because Cameron Sexton loves guns more than children. Guns more than a school principal. Guns more than a school custodian. Guns more than a substitute teacher. But of course, he's in a moral panic, Cameron Sexton is. We cannot allow the actions of the three members to distract us from protecting our children. We'll get through this together, and it will require talking about all solutions. No, they won't. Because there's one solution, and they will not talk about it. Ban those godforsaken weapons of war from private ownership. And then that other dickhead can come along and say, well, which gun shall we use to shoot the children now? Because we can't stop all of the shooting, so there ain't no sense in trying to stop none of them. You know, I try never to do Malloy's bits, but you know, there's just sometimes when you got to steal a little bit. I've mentioned lately how much I hate these people. Because I do. And I don't feel like it's consuming me very much. It's a sort of righteous hatred. And hatred in the defense of democracy is no vice. Where have I heard something like that before? Oh, it'll come to me sooner or later. So that's a starting place. There are other places to go as well. Rather a busy thorn in the side Thursday. Bernadette says, oh, Robin, you hit the nail on the head. I thought the same thing. This was a modern-day lynching of not only Representative Justin Jones, but a lynching of 78,000 voters, too. Yeah. And Jack in Shreveport, going back to the story about Van Jones saying, well, that's a very sad grandpa. Granddad? Jack says, describing a person as a grandfather implies that person cares about their children and their grandchildren. We know Trump has produced vile offspring and would throw any of his family members under the bus if it would save his own ass. Even Van Jones ought to be aware of that fact and not use the analogy that he did. Give it a few more years, and the evolution of Van Jones will—he'll be the new Herb Cain, maybe, or the new in L.A. Come on, help me, radio guy. Never mind. Let's be real here, Darlene in Connecticut says. This is the Tennessee GOP using a bullshit, trumped-up, ridiculous, supposed state legislature decorum violation to disenfranchise three large Democratic cities in that state. This is just the beginning. This tactic will now spread like a plague across all the other red southern states. I hope somehow the duly elected Democratic legislators don't sit idly by but can sue and ask for an injunction to stop this maddening outrage. Well, I imagine they will sue. I've got other questions. What if the voters in righteous fury send all three of these representatives back? Are they going to refuse to seat them? They expelled them from this house. I don't think they can make the expulsion in perpetuity. But Darlene's absolutely right. Every time they come up with a new tactic, it promulgates like mushrooms after poisonous toadstools after a warm spring rain. And it would suit me right down to the ground if the people of those districts would and others would descend on the Capitol and make it impossible for those maggots to do their dirty business at all. Jumping over to a story that we first mentioned last night, it turns out, in yesterday's program, we talked about how Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the anti-vaxxer, is going to run for president on the Democratic in the Democratic Party. We now know why. The Daily Beast reporting that that man who looks like rancid hot dog water smells, Stevie Three Shirts, spent months, according to Dan Leadenhall at the Daily Beast, imploring Bobby Kennedy Jr. to run against President Biden. The story was broken by Robert Costa over at CBS, not affiliated with the Columbia Record Club. Bannon hoped RFK Jr. could serve as both a useful chaos agent in the election while also helpfully stoking anti-vaccine sentiment around the country. This is infuriating because I hate even saying this, but Steve Bannon was thinking not the same way I was, but probably the same historical moment, because RFK Jr.'s uncle Teddy primaried Jimmy Carter in 1980 and weakened him through that primary process. And that is in part why we wound up with old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan, on January 20th, 1981. And Bannon probably knows this too, and knows that a primary opponent for Joe Biden might have the same impact. Of course, Ted Kennedy had a much higher profile than Bobby does. I don't think Bobby's never held elected office. Also, former heroin addict. It just really doesn't give a good goddamn about anybody but Bobby Kennedy Jr. I remember when my friends up in northern Wisconsin were in the fight of their lives trying to preserve the Pinocchio Hills. They begged Bobby Kennedy Jr. to come up and pick up their cause, bring more awareness to it. He told him just as quick as they ponied up $30,000, he'd by God be right there. It's disgusting. And so RFK Jr. is apparently willing to be a useful idiot for the fascist, Steve Bannon. It's disgusting. Thanks, thanks for that heads up, Ralphs. Thank you very kindly. Lee in New York. Robin, it's not about guns. It's about power. A black man upset about white people killed. Could you imagine the outrage if the colors were reversed? Of course not. Of course not. Not promulgate like no, metastasize. The elected Republicans are a cancer in the nation. You're right, Lee. True, Steve. Teddy wasn't a fucking anti-vaxxer. No, he was not. And he probably primaried Jimmy Carter from a less politically toxic place than that from which Bobby Jr. proceeds. Hey, Tamara. Tamara said, thank you, Ralphs, for the RFK heads up. Vile. It's really the, yeah. And Bernadette says, Van Jones, he's Trump's new African-American. I can't with him anymore.
See over there, that's my African-American.
I remember that. I know you do, too. And just for the fun of it, maybe somebody else did it before me, but I didn't see it. I created a new hashtag today for all the people, all the dudes who are so grossly and morally offended to find out that a brewing company, has an outreach to the LGBTQ community, in this case Bud Light. Feel free to use it if you tweet about the issue or social media about it at all. The hashtag is Bud Light Butthurt. BudLightButthurt. Bud Light Butthurt. Use it in a sentence. Kid Rock is Bud Light Butthurt. And now, Travis Tritt is Bud Light Butthurt. Now he was triggered. He was triggered because I'd like put out cans with pronouns on them. Not pronouns! And I've seen right-wingy people that I know on Facebook putting up posts about how they're moving over to Coors Light. Well, Coors Light's had an LGBTQ non-discrimination policy in place since 1978. Move along, butthurt. Bud Light butthurt. Move along. No Coors for you. How about Miller? Sorry. No. Stella Art? No. I know. How about, Spotted Cow, my favorite beer from New Glarus, from the New Glarus Brewing Company of New Glarus, Wisconsin. Sorry. Partially woman-owned and very accepting, entirely inclusive, very liberal. Whatever shall they do for a beer? Perhaps, no, G. Heilman, sorry. Maybe, you know what? Maybe some intrepid importer can find some miserable alcohol-laden swill and import it from Mother Moscovy. Putin Light. No, that's Donald Trump. And it can, maybe it can have labeling that says, is guaranteed not to have any relationships or any tolerance whatsoever for anyone who is not white, Christian, heterosexual. Mm-hmm. Proud of Jason Isbell again. Jason saw the Travis Tritt and Kid Rock story and roasted him right away. It's so dumb that this is even a thing. But here we are. some right-wing turd tweeted at Jason Isbell and said, you are a clown. Kid Rock is 100 times a better musician than ye. And Jason was badass enough to retweet the stupid fuck and say, boy, he can't shoot for shit, though, can he? You know, when an Alabama boy tells you can't shoot for shit, you know you've been insulted. And that, in turn, was in response to Jason, quote, tweeting, Kid Rock. Jason merely saying, is this one of those three words you wish you could say to your teenage self things? You know, Bud Light. And by the way, Kid Rock, Jason Isbell, whichever one of y'all's got a Grammy, hold your hand up. Yeah, that Kid Rock. Mm-hmm. Then there's the picture that's circulating of Kid Rock with a drag queen back in 2003. So there's that. And the queen was, of course, apparently the entire evening was roasting the living bejesus out of Kid. Kid! Obligatory Get Smart reference. Useful chaos agent. Lee says, where's Maxwell Smart? Agent 99. Jaime, Agent 13. Get on the shoe phone and find out. Lee adding, beer, as real as their outrage. Duff beer. And what's the beer that Hank Hill drinks in King of the Hill? The motto of which is, from the lukewarm water of the Brazos River. Nope, sorry, no Lone Star for him either, Ralphs. Lone Star's owned by G. Heilman, and G. Heilman is inclusive. They're going to wind up drinking Putinka vodka. Steve, getting right to the point, Travis Twitt and Kid Cock, fuck them. Now starts the countdown for when they get caught with men in their mouths. Yeah, Travis Tritt said, I have directed that all Anheuser-Busch products be removed from my hospitality rider for my tours. I wonder which inclusive company you'll be having then. God. You know, if they're not blowing up Yeti coolers full of Tannerite, they're setting fire to Nike shoes, or buying beer that they then pour down the drain, because they're geniuses. Carl, in Phoenix, messaged me and said, I love Dylan Mulvaney. I'm happy to hear you talk about her on your show. Now do Jeffrey Marsh. They're having their lives put in danger by rabid maggots. Also, stop apologizing for talking about trans issues on your show. Thank you. Thank you. But it was kind of scarring to me when I got sort of blessed out because these are part of the issues that, you know, this has always been a program about the issues of the day. And unfortunately, and I'll just say, this was, stories like this were painful back when they were first beginning. Because I was trans then too, I just couldn't say anything about it. But thanks for the support, Carl. And thank you to others of you who have said that. My transition has cost this program some of its community members, and it's sad. And I don't like losing members of the community. So maybe the folks that have stuck around don't mind hearing about it. I don't want to be a one-trick pony, though. And I don't think I ever have been. Steve in New York. See? Steve told me yesterday to quit apologizing for... Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Dave in the Blind says, subject line, baby goat. Maybe Kid Rock was going to Drag Queen Story Hour. Isn't that embarrassing? By the way, how many grown men refer to themselves as a baby goat? Maybe he's looking for his nanny. Ah. Kid! That always, yeah. There's Arlo Guthrie, Alice's Restaurant. Kid! And but you got to give it, you got to give him credit. That one song that he got vaguely famous for all summer long, he didn't just rip off Sweet Home Alabama. He also ripped off Werewolves of London in the same song. That's some Vanilla Ice level talent, or at least larcenous spirit. Alamo Beer. Okay. Alamo Beer, Hank Hill. From the lukewarm waters of the Brazos River. Brazos. Never can say that right. Tell the birth story of Van Jones again. That was hysterical. I can't stand Van Jones, Flavio says. Yeah, he's pretty cringe at this point. You talking about the one where people started saying that the love child referred to in the indictment was Van Jones? Is that it? I'm glad you enjoyed that as much as I did, Flavio, because I giggled for a long time about it. Because Flavio says, yeah, still rolling on the floor laughing my ass off after I heard it. You need to tell it again for anybody that missed it. Secret love child of Donald Trump revealed. It's just a headshot of a big smiling Van Jones. Oh, God. Larry Elder. Maybe Van Jones can be the right wing's new Larry Elder. That's who I was thinking of earlier. Better it occurred to me now than, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning. I heard from our good friend Dan Fisher. You know, we have freewheeling conversations from time to time, especially when Dan isn't out being a hardworking entertainment industry professional. And Dan is starting a podcast. It's not going to be like this. It's not going to be live. It's not going to be news of the day or anything. It's kind of based on, if you follow Dan on Facebook, it's sort of based on, it's kind of like his rankums, where he pulls together different genres and what do you like, et cetera. And Dan, he did a pilot episode with his lovely wife, Helene. And he kindly invited me to be his first non-family guest. So I don't know when the podcast will drop, but we're going to be recording it this weekend. I'm not going to tell you what the topic is. I think it's going to be a blast. But the minute Dan tells me it's out, I will tell you all. Because it's, well, he and I always have a great time, you know, when we're both behind a microphone. But I think that's the other thing. We're recording it this Sunday, and there's going to be video too. So I'm going to tidy up the studio a little bit. Meanwhile, just because it's Thorn in the Side Thursday, and well, the man with the bizarrely large head, Charlie Kirk, has, of course, his hot maggot take on the slaughter of the three children and three adults at the Covenant Presbyterian School, and you know, school massacres in general. Get the bucket. This is totally, completely, utterly, and entirely disgusting. Figured I'd warn you in advance. Trigger warning. Super nasty. Like I said, you know, anything that spews out of the vomitorium, the human vomitorium that is Charlie Kirk, is bound to be obnoxious. The numbers, which you are well aware of, are horrifying to contemplate. We're the only developed nation in the world that has this problem because we choose to have the problem of children getting slaughtered in schools by lawful gun owners. So, Charlie was speaking at some ingathering of maggots he was talking to the Turning Points USA Political Action Committee Faith Conference yesterday. Faith. When he unburdened himself of this.
How's it going, Charlie? I'm Austin. I just had a question related to Second Amendment rights. We saw the shooting that happened recently, and a lot of people are upset. But I'm seeing people argue for the other side that they want to take our Second Amendment rights away. How do we convince them that it's important to have the right to defend ourselves and all that good stuff?
Yeah, it's a great question. Thank you. So I'm a big Second Amendment fan, but I think most politicians are cowards when it comes to defending why we have a Second Amendment. This is why I would not be a good politician, or maybe I would. I don't know, but because I actually speak my mind. The Second Amendment is not about hunting. I love hunting.
No, you suck.
The Second Amendment is not even about personal defense. That is important. The Second Amendment is there, God forbid, so that you can defend yourself against a tyrannical government.
Come on.
And if that talk scares you, wow, that's radical, Charlie. I don't know about that. Well, then you have not really read any of the literature of our founding fathers.
Yep. Yep.
Number two, you have not read any 20th century history. You're just living in Narnia. By the way, if you were actually living in Narnia, you would...
I would beg to differ. The confidence of his stupidity is really something to behold. The fact of the matter is that defend yourself against a tyrannical government, no. Because the entire point of the Second Amendment, its language itself, it's a short amendment, but the language of the Second Amendment says, mentions the preservation of a free state. So it has nothing to do with a tyrannical government. A well-regulated militia, comma, being necessary to the security of a free state, comma, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Now, it goes without saying that they were, back then they were talking about muskets and flintlock pistols. And nobody except, like, yar, pirates were running around with pistols in their belts. Single-shot technology. But being necessary to the security of a free state, it is not for opposing a tyrannical government. By the way, if the government's that tyrannical, they're just going to come along with a Black Hawk helicopter and Hellfire missile your ass. Yeah, hell, they won't even fly it. They'll just use a drone, Charlie. You dumbass. And the fact of the matter is, there were no guns being carried by ordinary citizens on the streets of Boston or Philadelphia or New York. Not even Charleston or Wilmington or Savannah. The people carrying guns were military. You didn't walk into ye olde ale house packing heat because it was deemed incivil. But back to the dipshit.
Be wiser than wherever you're living, because C.S. Lewis was really smart. So I don't know what alternative universe you're living in. You just don't want to face reality that governments tend to get tyrannical. And that if people need an ability to protect themselves and their communities and their families. Now, we must also be real. We must be honest with the population.
Hey, y'all, you know the last time the government got tyrannical? And you know what the people who think like Charlie Kirk do, who thought that way back then, thought was tyrannical? People who think like Charlie Kirk thought it was tyrannical for the federal government to start talking about the fact that maybe it was fucking evil for a bunch of white people to be enslaving people who had been kidnapped from their own homes and dragged across the ocean on the Middle Passage and put into chattel slavery. Saying that that was wrong was tyrannical. To the point that they took up arms and started shooting at the federal government. 1861. But we haven't even gotten to the truly horrifying part of this. I'm going to try to keep my mouth shut. I'm going to fail. I know.
Having an armed citizenry comes with a price. Wow. And that is part of liberty. Driving comes with a price. 50,000 people die on the road every year. That's a price. You get rid of driving, you'd have 50,000 less auto fatalities. But we have decided that the benefit of driving, speed, accessibility, mobility, having products, services, is worth the cost of 50,000 people dying on the road. Wow. So we need to be very clear that you're not going to get gun deaths to zero. It will not happen.
Right.
You can significantly reduce them through having more fathers in the home.
Yes.
By having
really? More fathers in the home. Wonder how many fathers shoot the mothers or the children in any given year. Well, we're never going to get to zero with that either, chuckles. And this line of unreasoning, it's the same thing that was used by that goon in Tennessee. Well, we're never going to stop them all, so there ain't no sense in trying to stop none of them. And by the way, more fathers in the home, that's coded language. Because we know who these people are.
Having more armed guards in front of schools?
Nope. More armed guards do not stop more school shootings. That's just more guns in schools. How'd that work out at Uvalde? And, of course, we know from yesterday's program that even the cops in Nashville themselves say it was just simply a matter of luck that there were only 6 slaughtered at that school and not 16 or 60. Because Audrey Hale was ready to go. 3 semi-automatic weapons fully loaded. A pistol. And a determination toward murder.
We should have an honest and clear reductionist view of gun violence, but we should not have a utopian one. You will never live in a society when you have an armed citizenry and you won't have a single gun death. That is nonsense. It's drivel.
Yeah, it is nonsense, because some gun humper freedom protector will, from time to time, shoot their own dick off. Because that's who they are.
Hey, honey, I'm going to go over to the Piggly Wiggly, get some bread and milk and peanut butter.
Well, hon, don't forget to take your freedom protector with you. You never know when there's going to be a gun battle in the fruits and vegetables.
Be good at right here with me.
Bang! Honey, you okay?
Better call 911. I ain't going to Piggly Wiggly. I done shot my dick off. Oops.
But I think it's worth it. I think it's worth to have
this,
a cost.
This is the truly repugnant part. How morally dead must you be? How absolutely spiritually bankrupt must you be to say that 3 children and 3 adults, not even cold in the ground yet, were worth it so Charlie, can perpetuate his gun-humping fantasy. He sickens me.
An armed citizenry and you won't have a single gun death. That is nonsense. It's drivel. Wow. But I think it's worth it. I think it's worth to have a cost of, unfortunately, some gun deaths every single year so that we can have the Second Amendment to protect our other God-given rights. That is a prudent deal.
What are the other God-given rights that the gun humpers are protecting except for the right to hump guns? If gun humpers could hump guns, how many guns would a gun humper hump? What else? We've seen all manner of evil all over this country, and the gun humpers are simply not there. They're not to be found. The only time they go out marching around with their goddamn guns is when they think that
Democrats are going to take away our guns. And then we won't be able to shoot the drone out of the sky at 40,000 feet before it hellfire missiles our little fascist compound when we're marching around goose-stepping and shit.
It is rational. Nobody talks like this. They live in a complete alternate universe. So then how do you reduce? Very simple. People say, oh, Charlie, how do you stop school shootings? I don't know. How did we stop shootings at baseball games? Because we have armed guards outside of baseball games. That's why.
You know, I'm guessing those words are probably going to come back to haunt Chuckles. Of course, here's the hilarity of it. He's in a room talking to a bunch of gun humpers, maggots, same. And no guns were allowed. Because that way there are less shootings if you don't let people bring their freedom protectors, because he knows his audience. And he knows one of them might get real wrought up and decide to pull out a firearm and ventilate him. National Rifle Association is going to be having their clavern in Taliban Indianapolis, as Dave mentioned. Guess what? There will be no guns allowed at the National Rifle Association meeting. None. There will be, next year, there will be no guns allowed at the Republican National Convention. Of course not. That would be madness. But it's a pretty good bargain for 9-year-olds to be chopped into chutney by semi-automatic weapons fire so that he, Charlie, can sit around and fondle his firearms as though they were some romantic interest of his. Pretty good bargain. You know, you can't even, in some instance, you can't even take a firearm with you to a gun show. And there is some science behind all of this, because it turns out that of the ones who survive, that armed guards do not deter someone who is on a suicide mission. Because remember, these school shootings are fundamentally ambushes. So the murderer can take out the armed guards first and then go on about their business. Or maybe the armed guard just runs away. Remember the armed guard who ran away at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School? A prudent deal. It's rational to sacrifice children for his fetish.
How do we stop all the shootings at airports? We have armed guards outside of airports. How do we stop all the shootings at banks? We have armed guards outside of banks. How do we stop all the shootings at gun shows? Notice there's not a lot of mass shootings at gun shows. There's all these guns. Because everyone's armed.
That's the thing. They aren't. Oh, they just think that's so funny, talking about mass shootings. Oh, that's a real knee slapper.
If our money and our sporting events and our airplanes have armed guards, why don't our children?
So, an armed guard for every kid? Tyrannical government! But it's who they are and where they are. And they're never going to be reached. The only way to save this country is to build enough energy around getting rid of these weapons of war and then simply doing it. Now, I think a gun buyback scheme would be fine. Because, you know, the gun humpers do love their money. Ban the sale of these damn things. And then pay two times fair market value for the things. And then, you know, throw them into a furnace. And so there's that, and here we are, Phil Robstered for an hour, and we still have $660 to raise. So far in the first hour, we are zero. Hey, like and subscribe and leave comments, y'all. I'm much better at this. I know that's annoying, but please just bear with me. Steve in New York, Charlie Cock, Dunning, meet Kruger. Kruger, Dunning. Now we have enough for bridge. And Jack in Shreveport, a beer to move to. In college, many years ago, one of my friends introduced our group to Huber beer. In spite of what I just read on the web, I found it to do a number on my gut and would vote in favor of Bud if given a choice. Let the MAGAs go to Huber. And this is from a long time back, but maybe Pennsylvania folks will remember. Anybody remember Stoney's? Stoneys? Jesus God, that was horrible beer. I know, because we bought a lot of it in college. Because it was like $4 a case. Yes, I'm that old. But when you couldn't get anything else, you could usually scrape up your couch change and get a case of Stoney's. They can have that if it's still made. God, that was nasty beer. Natty Bow, maybe? No, I bet they're inclusive, too. Because, see, that's the thing. These maggots just beat the dickens out of me. No, they just beat all. You know that? They just beat all. These are the people who are supposed to be all about economics and fiscal realism. And it never dawned on them for an instant that maybe big old corporations who are dedicated only to profit might want to sell beer to people who love differently than maggots do, if maggots are even capable of love. So, yeah, a little pride here and there, a little rainbow washing. I guess it's just too much to ask of them to have that level of cognitive clarity. Let's see, yeah. It is Thursday. That means we've got the Green News Report, Brad and Desi. And sometimes I get so caught up in what we're doing here that I don't run the Green News Report, and I always feel bad when I don't. A beer that is gone, Lee tells me, Rheingold beer. And Ralphs has gotten us off the goose egg. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you so very much. Hope you have some company soon. And that's a valid point. And Ralph said, I'll add another 10 if somebody else kicks in 10. Thank you, Ralph. So that would get us down to 6:30. It'd be great. No, but Stephen New York is correct. He says, Second Amendment, there are some things we have to actually look at, you know, textualism. The word state in the Second Amendment was capitalized, i.e. capital S state, so that refers to each of the 13 states, not the state in general. The Second Amendment refers to the defense of each state, because militias. Look at Article 1, Section 8. It says the Congress has the right to raise and support armies, not a militia, if the founders did anything. They were particular about the words they used. Hello, Dr. Bill. Truth. They didn't just say things. Article 1, Section 8 also says that Congress shall have the power to provide for the calling forth for the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions. Article 1, Section 8 also says that Congress shall have the power to provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia, and for governing such part of them as may be employed in the service of the United States, reserving to the states respectively the appointment of the officers and the authority of training the militia according to the discipline prescribed by Congress. So what does this mean? The Second Amendment talks about a militia. It is the Congress who calls forth the militia. Notice the difference between armies and militias. The Constitution specifies what militias are for, to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions. The presumption of all of this is no standing army, and that to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions requires the Congress to call forth the militia, which is the armed people, small p people. In sum, the Second Amendment is there to assure that there is a sufficiently armed people so that Congress can call forth that militia in order to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions. It has nothing to do with an armed populace to check the government. As a corollary to the notion of no standing army, this is why the Constitution only allows the Congress to appropriate money for an army for 2 years at a time. Because the framers of the Constitution were decidedly against standing armies. They actually saw a standing army as a greater threat to freedom than some potential outside invaders. It's worth remembering that in 1787, we weren't exactly on the best of terms with Mother England. And, of course, it would get worse and worse and worse until, you know, 1812. Every time I'm in D.C., I think about the burning of the White House and the looting of the Capitol. Long memory. But they don't want to hear, the maggots do not want to hear anything in the realm of fact. Oh, no. They want to have their bias confirmed, and they want someone to tell them that they're perfectly legit and valid for needing their blue steel binky. Hey, thank you, Nina. Nina just met Ralph's challenge. Thank you, Nina. So we are down to $630. basically that's today and yesterday and $30 of Tuesday. So we're making progress. That's wonderful. Thank you, Nina. And thank you, Jude. That was sweet of you. So, like I said, I forgot to run the Green News Report Tuesday. Shame on me. So let's check it out. And look, if you want to engage in some conversation, jump in. 844-843-4676. 844-THE-HORN. And Robin Kincaid Horn on Skype. That's the new Skype account. One less manifestation of making me say Bob. Yo. Moment. Interesting, the little icon down in the corner of my desktop says, pollen high today. Yes, it is. It so very is. The news, well, yeah, let's go here. Let's go here. I don't want to break up the flow. This story is one that I hope somehow manages to rise above the din of our daily disasters and moment-by-moment indignities. I know this is going to be a dog bites man story, or and in breaking news, water is wet. But y'all, Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Fappy Thomas is dirty as shit. Corrupt. And to a degree that, well, it doesn't shock me. But wow. The story via ProPublica talks about, for instance, at the end of the Supreme Court term in 2019, with the final opinion having been delivered from the court, Clarence Fappy Thomas got on a big old private jet. That big old private jet, in turn, was bound for Indonesia. Why on earth would the oldest member of the Supreme Court be getting on a jet bound for Indonesia? Well, he and Jet Set Jenny, Jinsurrectionist Thomas, were going to Indonesia to catch a yacht. 9 days of sailing in and betwixt a bunch of islands on a super yacht, private chef and everything. The bill for it would have been over $500,000. Now, our pal Tom in sunny San Rafael knows a bit about yachts. Tom, this was a 162-foot yacht. So I can't imagine how many people it took to staff that. Crew it, I'm sorry. But fortunately, Fappy and Jet Set Jinsurrectionist Thomas didn't have to pay out of pocket for that vacation. No. The costs were all covered by a right-wing mega donor one of those real estate dudes named Harlan Crow. Harlan Crow owned the jet. Harlan Crow owned the yacht. And so, round and round the islands they sailed. And Harlan Crow was just doing that for his friends, Fappy and Gensurrectionist. The thing is, that was not a one-off. No, by the time ProPublica was done looking, digging around on it, turned out that Fappy and Gensurrectionist had been going vacationing for free with Harlan Crow for more than 20 years. Harlan Crow has a Bombardier Global 5000 jet. Harlan Crow has taken Fappy to the Bohemian Grove, the all-male retreat. He's hosted Fappy at his massive ranch in East Texas. Every year, Fappy spends about a week at his at Crow's retreat, private resort in the Adirondacks. And Fappy Thomas, at no point in time, ever, even once, disclosed these gifts. That's important because in the era after Watergate, the Congress passed laws that requires that justices, judges, members of Congress, and federal officials have to disclose most of the gifts they receive. But Fappy is above the law, and he knows it. Harlan Crow responded to some inquiries. Fappy understands the Miranda warnings. He has the right to remain silent, and by God, he did. Harlan Crow said, "Well, I've extended hospitality to Fappy and Jenny over the years, but Thomas never asked for it, and it's no different from the hospitality we have extended to our many, many other dear, dear friends." And remember, at least in theory, even outside those ethics laws, those post-Watergate ethics laws, there is the judicial code of conduct that says that judges, justices, and the like shall avoid even the appearance of impropriety. The appearance. Well, this is not the appearance of impropriety. This is straight up, unadulterated, pure 200 proof impropriety. A retired federal judge named Nancy Gertner, appointed by Bill Clinton, said, "It's incomprehensible to me that someone would do this." She was so scrupulous about avoiding the appearance of impropriety that she said, "When I made restaurant dinner reservations, I wouldn't even mention my title. It was a question of not wanting to use the office for anything other than that, what it was intended." A former government ethics lawyer, Virginia Cantor, she worked under both parties, said that Fappy, quote, seems to have completely disregarded his higher ethical obligations. When a justice's lifestyle is being subsidized by the rich and famous, it absolutely corrodes public trust. Quite frankly, it makes my heart sink. Oh, Virginia, you're surprised? What's fascinating, though, given that Fappy violated the law and never disclosed any of this graft, is how ProPublica found it. And this, in an era of vapid journalism, is the real stuff. They dug into flight records. They got their hands on records internal to Crow's company that were distributed to his employees. They talked to the crew of the super yacht. They talked to members of the Bohemian Club. They even went so far as talking to a scuba diving instructor in Indonesia. Contrast this with the law that Congress people deal with. They can't accept a gift of value more than $50. And they would have to get pre-approval from the ethics committee, a member of Congress would, to take the trips that Fappy and Ginsurrectionist took. People who know both Crow and Fappy said that, well, they have become genuine friends. Along the way, Crow gave $500,000 to a teabagger group that Ginsurrectionist founded and paid her $120,000 salary. And, of course, he has spread his wealth broadly to pursue a fascist capture of this country. And of course, he's deeply interested in anything that touches upon real estate. So, well, who knows what they talk about? Crow said, "My wife and I have never sought to influence Justice Thomas on any legal or political issue." Meanwhile, in a recent interview, Fappy said,
"I don't have any problem with going to Europe, but I prefer the United States, and I prefer seeing the regular parts of the United States."
You know, the regular parts of the United States that are in the Indonesian archipelago.
"I prefer the RV parks," Fappy said. "I prefer the Walmart parking lots to the beaches and things like that."
That was just a little bit ago. That's after he's already been to Indonesia and swanned around the islands in the super yacht.
"No, there's just something normal to me about it. I come from regular stock. I prefer that. I prefer being around that."
Oh, the horror it must have been for him and Ginsurrectionist to be there amongst all that swanky hoity-toityness aboard the 162-feet yacht. He's dirty. He's filthy. Remember, he tried to support the insurrection when even some of the other conservative weirdos on the court didn't say no, but hell no. Steve in New York pointing out, Harlan Crow owns himself a Supreme Court justice, bought and paid for. And if we had a functioning government, why do I bother? There would be, and again, I asked the same question I've asked in regard to FAPI in the past. It costs nothing to file a bill for a member of Congress. Where is the one heroic member of the House of Representatives minority who will simply file a bill of impeachment against FAPI Thomas? Just one. Just one. Because the only remedy to a dirty Supreme Court justice is impeachment. And FAPI damned well knows that. Crook.
I prefer the Walmart parking lot.
What? The Walmart parking lot in Bali? Harlan Crow, meanwhile, has given more than $10 million in publicly disclosed political contributions. Then he's also given a shit ton of money to dark money groups, and we don't know how much that was. Speaking to the New York Times at one point, Harlan Crow said, "Well, I don't disclose what I'm not required to disclose." Yeah, I'm right there, Ralphs. Hello, Sheldon Whitehouse and AOC. Sure would be nice. Just would. This clown, this toxic oligarch, Harlan Crow, even gave FAPI Thomas a Bible valued at $19,000 that had once belonged to Frederick Douglass. Now that FAPI disclosed. Frederick Douglass's Bible? I'll bet you that corrupt old fucker FAPI can't even touch that without asbestos gloves. And the details. Harlan Crow's yacht is called the Michaela Rose. It's outfitted with motorboats and, wait for it, a giant inflatable rubber duck. A duck. FAPI and Ginsurrectionists went to Komodo National Park, where even the Komodo dragon wouldn't eat him. They went to Mount Kelimutu, a volcanic lake, Ponte Meco, an absolutely pristine beach that you can only get to by boat. Remember, FAPI's, huh? I don't like the beaches. And nothing will happen. You know, wait. Something could happen. If this is, in fact, a violation of law, and if those federal statutes have teeth, criminal penalties, then, yes, it, again, why do I continue? Then at least in theory, Merrick Garland, the Attorney General of the United States, could expand the brief of Jack Smith, which is already fairly expansive, and say, yeah, by the way, See if Fappy violated any laws, and if he did, you know how to present to a grand jury. Because he could be charged with that. If it is a crime, he could be charged with it. Unfortunately, I fear that that is entirely a thin reed upon which to hang our hopes. Kedrick Payne is the senior director for ethics at Campaign Legal Center. He said, if Justice Thomas received free travel on private planes and yachts, failure to report the gifts is a violation of the disclosure law. Be nice to see if there are criminal penalties for that. This report, if those are indeed criminal statutes, the research that went into this report would be sufficient to form the basis of a grand jury investigation. Jude writes in, subject line, dear sister, as I'm trying to take in all of today's horn, the massive issues with each holding their own weight, you're revealing a lot, Robin, and doing so with a keen focus encompassing your being. It's challenging and difficult for me to grasp, yet necessary, which leads me to Rumi. We both love the poet Rumi. I went inside my heart to see how it is. Something there makes me hear the whole world weeping. There is an aspect of our humanness that resides in the knowing one must move through to reach the beyond. Thank you. Thank you, Jude. Something there makes me hear the whole world weeping. Yeah. Yeah. Lee simply writes, judicial ethics laws for the Supreme Court? Insert maniacal laugh. Uncle Thomas has forgotten what recuse means when it comes to Ginny. That's ginsurrectionist. Lee says, gifts to the Thomases. Let's go Al Capone on them. Did they pay taxes on the gifts? And thank you, Tom and Sonny San Rafael. That super yacht, the Michaela Rose, probably a crew of 10 to 18. Wow. But remember, and thank you, Tom, remember, Fappy prefers the Walmart parking lots. I'm a hillbilly. We don't even hang out in the Walmart parking lot. You know, that's kind of a tell that he doesn't really know that Walmart parking lots are not happening places. Hi. Although there is that phenomenon, to be fair. If you see a friend of yours in not just Walmart, in the grocery store, anywhere, it's like, even if you saw him yesterday, it's like you haven't seen him in months. It's like, hey, what are you doing here? Shopping? What are you doing? Shopping? It's similar to the phenomenon at the beginning of cell phones back in, God, 94. I had a bag phone. Most cell phone calls at the time were consisted of, hey, guess where I am? Where are you? I'm in my car on the phone. Fappy calling Sammy Bad Breath.
Hey. Guess where I am?
Where?
On the phone? On a yacht? In Indonesia?
Damn. Oh, fair enough.
Randy Radar says, no, your lot hangs out in the Rural King parking lot. No respect. Randy adding, Thomas was appointed by former President George H.W. Bush. Yeah, upon the passing of a good man, a good and decent and determined man, a good, decent, determined public servant, Thurgood Marshall. Of course, you know what would happen if, say, a grand jury were to indict Fappy. Jim Jacketoff Jordan would immediately call it, and so would the rest of maggot world. Political persecution! You know, they said that about Richard Nixon for a little while, until the evidence came in. I mean, what the hell's wrong with this country? A nice guy can't even give a Supreme Court justice a $500,000 trip halfway around the world? And y'all, and people want to say that that's a crime? And you know what? He's so, Fappy and Ginny are so brazen. They'll probably continue to go on trips, even now that he's been busted. I mean, not busted, but at least now that we know. Huh, well, isn't that interesting? Thank you, Mark, in Florida. Democratic Tennessee Representative Gloria Johnson survived her expulsion vote by one vote. The third member of the Tennessee House is presently pleading his case. And by the way, because I am so often such a little ray of sunshine, it is nice to have some good news once in a while. And the good news is this. The Supreme Court, by a 7-2 vote, we know who the two were, don't we? Sure. It was Fappy Thomas and his partner in crime, Sammy Bad Breath. Alito, halitosis. That's why Sammy Bad Breath. I have to mention that once in a while. They dissented in a case brought by West Virginia Attorney General Pill Push and Patty Morrissey, that crooked creep from Big Pharma. He went running and squalling to the Supreme Court begging for emergency relief because the 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals put back in place an injunction on West Virginia's transgender sports ban. This human pile of offal, OFFAL, otherwise known as a big bag of guts, used the power of the state of West Virginia, one of the brokest states in the union, spent God knows how much money, taxpayer money of one of the brokest states in the union, to attack one 12-year-old little girl. To try to keep her from running track with her friends in school. What a big, strong man he is. And he's a Christian. Sure he is. And by a 7-2 vote, this Supreme Court told him to go and shit in his hat.
Now, it's only a partial victory. This just means the little girl can keep running track. She's destroying women's sports! Yeah, if one out of 100 of these transphobic, turfy shitbirds have ever even watched a minute of girls' or women's sports, I'd be surprised. The court only refused to hear it on an emergency basis because there was no emergency. 12-year-old little girls running track seldom cause emergencies. They did not, however, reach the merits of the case. So it will continue on with a decision as to whether or not to hear it. But the case below, the case will continue in federal court and have to be tried. So it's a little victory, not a great big one. But we'll take the ones we get. Back to Fappy. Matt in San Francisco says, Anita Hill warned us that high-tech lynching was a bunch of bullshit. I feel sorry for the decent justices. Can you imagine working your ass off your entire life, finally reaching the pinnacle? You're on the Supreme Court. And you have to work with those six religious zealots every day. Sigh. Yeah. Well, I'm back to Beer for Maggots. Hey, Claire. Hello. Hello, my name is Putin. It's the perfect beer for GOP thirsty maggots. Brewed by the Scottish brewery Brewdog in protest against Russia's treatment of LGBTQ++ people. Best not tell the sensitive Republicans this fact, though. The company sent a crate to Putin with the label, Not a Taste for Gays. Tell him that. Interesting side effect. Drinkers have intense and sudden need to ride around in the nude. Oh, my. Here I am, not a beer drinker anymore. Dang it. Hello, my name is Putin. Oh, my name is Putin. That could be fun. I don't suppose you can find a photo of the label or anything and send it along, could you, Claire? Beer for thirsty maggots. Oh, and Mark down in Florida. Jude wants you to know, she says, send my gratitude for what he said after the Uvalde horror, that a drawn weapon cannot be outdrawn. One of my grandsons had been holding for a friend. After I stated Mark's words, he returned that gun. Words of wisdom coupled with experience opens the door to action. Peace, Jude. There are things that happen here that we don't even imagine ever happening or being possible. Uh-oh. More bad news for the thirsty maggots. Jack Daniels teams up with RuPaul Drag Race alums in Small Town Big Pride campaign. Jack Daniels, Tennessee Fire, Drag Queen Summer Glamp. Who's going to tell Travis Tritt? Who's going to tell Kid Rock? I mean, Jack Daniels is even in Tennessee. Maybe the Tennessee legislature can do something about it. Oh, and as for Fappy in Indonesia, Brother Deacon Asa says, not to mention that those young Indonesian rent boys can be quite economical when your income at home is in U.S. dollars. Brother Deacon Asa is apparently familiar with the beer you mentioned, Claire. Hello, my name is Vladimir. Oh, there's the story at HuffPost. Thanks, Ralphs. Pro-gay, hello, my name is Vladimir. Beer sent to Putin from Scotland's Brewdog Brewery. comes in a pretty pink case. It's a double IPA brewed with limonic berries. the folks at BrewDog posted a blog saying that it had been made for uber hetero men who ride horses while topless and carrying knives. They went on to say the sick, twisted legislation brought about in Russia that prevents people from living their true lives is something we didn't want to just sit back and not have an opinion on. Our core beliefs are freedom of expression, freedom of speech, and a dogged, no pun intended, passion for doing what we love. And a photo of a shirtless dude on horseback saluting, and another guy in a heavy Russian overcoat holding a bottle of the beer, saluting Putin. Dear God, what have we come to? Oh, there's the label. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Hello, my name is Vladimir. I am bareback double IPA. Gasp as I ride semi-naked on horseback through Siberian tundra and straight down your throat. I am 100% hetero and will pass laws to prove it. Drinking me gives you energy, ignorance, and dogmatism required to shoot a deer with your top off, go river fishing with your top off, and pass internationally denounced discriminatory legislation, top optional, before you've even had your caviar breakfast. I contain sexual performance-enhancing limonic berries, power only to be harnessed by those engaging with the opposite sex, of course, from Russia, without love, Vlad. Warning, may contain traces of sarcasm and protest. I like it. Although I must confess, I got over my IPA phase a long time ago. Just not a big hops girl. In fact, I was talking with a brewer the other day, and we both agreed, and he's a real live, honest to goodness master brewer. We both agreed that, a big old scoop full of hops will cover a lot of brewing sins. Oh, no, it's an IPA. Funny, it tastes like musty sweat socks. Well, it's the musty sweat socks IPA. Can you not taste the fruitiness of the hops? It's a shame that stuff isn't available in the United States. Big, brawny, strong men like Kid Rock and Travis Tritt need a masculine beer like that. It is not lost on me that the person that the Tennessee Maggots did not expel has a complexion significantly paler than the two that they will. Well, what a wonderful surprise. Hey, Gino. Gino out in Utah, thank you so much. We just went from $630 to go to $330 to go. Gino just did a have a show on me. Thank you, Gino. Thank you. That's amazing. Another bill gonna get knocked down. That means so very much. Jude just asking, where's Scott? I don't know if Scott's listening right now, but I do know that when I set up the new Skype account, Scott was listening and he jumped right in. So we know that Scott is not trying to reach me via that guy's name. who's now mercifully gone. So I presume we will hear from Scott in his own good time. Well, yeah, maybe. Ralph says maybe Kid Rock can, et cetera, can import, "Hello, my name is Vladimir." Now, you know what'll happen, because it's all a grift with the maggots. Nitwit Nero will go into the brewing business. It's been a while since he ran a really large-scale scam. Trump University, selling meat through the mail.
There I was. One of the most powerful men in the world, running the biggest corporation in the world. The next minute I'm being fired by a guy who sells meat through the mail.
God bless John Goodman. There is still more. A former member of the Michigan House of Representatives, a maggot, the former Speaker of the Michigan House, Rick Johnson, along with three other people, have been indicted. The Detroit News says that the indictments were handed down today, after an investigation that was years in the making. It had to do with the state's licensing of marijuana. Brian Pierce and Vincent Brown are also charged with conspiracy to commit bribery. John Daywood Dallaly is charged with paying the bribes. Johnson, 70, a Republican from Leroy, Michigan. Maybe it's Leroy. Pocketed more than $100,000 from multiple people who were pursuing bribes in exchange for licenses to launch marijuana facilities at the dawn of Michigan's cannabis industry. U.S. Attorney Mark Totten in Grand Rapids said, "Certainly what I've described today should give anybody reason to question the process and what effect all of these payments of money had on the chair of the board, who was essentially serving as one of the key gatekeepers at the beginning of this fledgling industry." And then, lo and behold, Johnson voted in support of a marijuana business during his tenure leading the board and then accepted a $75,000 loan from an investor with a stake in the deal. Detroit News said the loan violated the spirit of a state law aimed at preventing corruption, according to the legislator who sponsored the policy, and raised new concerns about secret financial arrangements at the dawn of Michigan's marijuana industry, which generated more than $2 billion in sales in 2022 alone. U.S. Attorney Totten said Johnson accepted these bribes corruptly. Is there any other way? With the understanding that these bribes were offered to influence him or reward him for actions he might take. Maggot's gonna MAGA. And you gotta figure that this is, any industry is subject to corruption. This was too. Back to Tennessee for a minute. Because Representative Justin Jones, whom they, well, corruptly expelled from the House earlier today, did not leave without telling the maggots exactly where he stood. If you get chills listening to this, that's okay, I did too.
So today, we are brought to hear where members are responding in the most extreme measure, not because of what we did, but because by breaking the quorum, we broke the glass of your false power for the world to see. We broke the glass of this chamber that someone called sacred. One of the members on the other side of the aisle was in tears and said, I've never seen such a breach of this sacred chamber. And I thought to myself, that representative has obviously never read history. Because is it in this chamber, if you walk around this Capitol, you'll see bullet holes when representatives got into conflict. You'll see duels take place on this House floor, debating whether people like me should be treated like equal citizens under law. This is not a temple. This is a place where we're supposed to wrestle for our democracy and wrestle ideas and give voice to 78,000 constituents each of us represents. But for so long, this body, drunk with power, has modeled for the world what we know as nothing less than authoritarianism. And today is the climax of that behavior. That a week after a mass shooting plagued our community, the most direct action this legislative body takes, or should I say my colleagues on the other side of the aisle are taking, is to expel us for speaking about the issues of weapons of war on our streets.
I have a feeling that Justin Jones is going places. I can think right off the bat of one place I would like for him to go. I would like to see him challenge, Marsha 3X Blackburn for Senate. I'd like to see him debate her and leave nothing but a little greasy spot. Well, little dye spot after he was done wiping the floor with her. Justin Jones speaks with the moral authority of a man who is an honest witness to history. And I don't know what those maggots thought they were doing, but they didn't make themselves look any better. And they are seen. They are seen. And the kids are being heard. This was posted to Twitter today from March for Our Lives. The children who have to deal with the trauma of going to school every day, knowing that the political leadership of their state gives not a tinker's damn about their lives because they're not fetuses anymore. They'll be voting soon. And the maggot mammoths have wandered into the tar pit. I'm so proud of them. You ban books. You ban drag. Kids are still in body bags. It's true. And they're not going away. I wasn't part of a crowd that big, but I do know after this legislative session down in Charleston, I know what it feels like to feel the power of righteous fury surrounded by the youth of my state, shouting at the top of their lungs at the elected representatives cloistered with behind heavy doors doing wicked things. You feel the change in that moment. You feel the onrush of the future. I want to go back to Clarence Thomas for a minute. I just saw this story. Maybe we get somewhere now. AOC, said today, this is beyond party or partisanship. This degree of corruption is shocking, almost cartoonish. Thomas must be impeached. Barring some dramatic change, this is what the Roberts Court will be known for. Rank corruption, erosion of democracy, and the stripping of human rights. Good. Now introduce the bill. Stand not upon the order of your going, but go at once. Find a couple other people willing to sign on with you. Do it. Drag the minority caucus with you, if you must. But do it. Mark Joseph Stern does a lot of great legal analysis over at Slate. He tweeted, "It's clear that Thomas brazenly violated this law. Many times. We should call this what it is, corruption. Just to be clear here, it was a flagrant violation of federal law for Thomas to accept this wildly expensive luxury vacation without reporting it as a gift. His conduct isn't just unseemly, it's illegal." Let's walk and chew gum at the same time. Introduce a bill of impeachment against Clarence Thomas. I mean, hell, I think you could introduce bills of impeachment against Fappy, Sammy Bad Breath, Brat, Ann's boy Neil, and the handmaid. Probably old Balls and Strikes, too. For giving false testimony in their confirmations on their positions regarding a woman's right to the control of her own reproductive system. But let's start with Fappy. Get a bill of impeachment against him in the House, and Merrick, pick up the phone, call Jack Smith, tell him his brief just got expanded by one corrupt Supreme Court justice and his entirely, utterly, equally corrupt spouse. And we mustn't forget about this. We absolutely must not forget this. This needs to stay at the top of our priorities list for 2024. and we cannot campaign from fear. The man is corrupt, and the man needs to go. And this is without even regard to the balance of power on the court. Even if Joe Biden were to appoint zombie Clarence Darrow, it would still be a 5-4 maggot majority court. Heady times, no? So, we've entered the third hour of the program. Lines are open. But we are going to go and take the Green News Report now. Okay? Stress line is 844-843-4676. You know, I think about it every time I say stress line. I think of Bill Miller. And I think he, if there's a great beyond, I think he's sitting in the shade somewhere, playing his harp. Yeah, no, not the plucky one like you get Angel. No, no, probably a honor. And grinning from ear to ear, knowing that he's memorialized every evening when I mentioned the phone number. The stress line. Mr. Stress. 844-843-4676. 844-THE-HORN. And, of course, over on Skype, Robin Kincaid Horn. They both get through the same way. First come, first served. And let's see what Brad and Desi have going on.
It's Thursday, April 6, 2023.
I think you have to ask yourself, who are they hurting with this? And they clearly think they're hurting President Biden.
Oil prices spike after OPEC announces surprise production cuts. Good news, bad news with California's record snowpack. Plus,
you know, we're seeing it as a boom for American innovation, American industry, and it's good for the planet as well.
Biden administration boosts clean energy and clean manufacturing, cracks down on toxic mercury and lead water pipes.
Well, they're busy. All of those stories and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Over the weekend, hundreds of cases of beer spilled on a Montana train derailment. The train spilled hundreds of cases of beer into this local river, including a whole bunch of Coors Light. But authorities say the water is fine, and so is the river.
Coors Light Slam. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, yet another train derailment in the U.S., but hey, at least this time it was only beer.
If only that were the only train derailment in the U.S. this week. Officials say that that train that spilled cases of beer in Montana had no lasting environmental impact, but a train carrying flammable ethanol that derailed in southwestern Minnesota on Sunday forced nearby residents to evacuate their homes after the rail cars ruptured, igniting a massive fire that burned for days.
That's not nearly as funny.
Officials say the water and air are safe, but cleanup will take months. And in the East Palestine, Ohio chemical train disaster back in February, the Justice Department has now filed a civil lawsuit against the railroad company Norfolk Southern for violations of the Clean Water Act. Another tornado outbreak, the fourth in as many weeks in the U.S. At least five people were killed in southeast Missouri by an overnight tornado on Tuesday that caused widespread damage. John Hart of the National Storm Prediction Center warns
there will be more systems like this all spring, unfortunately.
Climate data on tornadoes is mixed, but evidence suggests that global warming is increasing the frequency, magnitude, and geography of tornado behavior, including increasing dangerous nighttime tornadoes. In California, it's official. After a relentless series of extreme winter storms, the state's overall snowpack is the deepest ever recorded in more than 70 years, officials said Monday, at more than 230% of normal.
That's good?
That is. That's good news for the state's farmers and struggling hydropower industry after years of drought. But state water officials this week also announced they're shifting to flood response to prepare still flooded areas for upcoming potentially disastrous snowmelt.
Because it is getting warm out here in a day or two, and that could be very bad news, I guess.
Indeed it could. Meanwhile, global oil prices jumped after the Saudi-led OPEC Plus oil cartel this week announced surprise cuts to crude oil production, slashing output by more than a million barrels per day to keep supplies tight and prices high, a potential new threat to global efforts to curb inflation. Even though the U.S. is now the world's biggest producer of oil, oil is still traded on the global market, so the U.S. economy is vulnerable to oil price shocks. Energy analysts say the cartel's cut could add more than 50 cents a gallon to the national average retail price of gas this summer.
And I guess we should blame Joe Biden?
Well, you know, Republicans certainly will.
I would expect no less.
But some good news. The Biden Administration Environmental Protection Agency has approved California's plan to phase out a wide range of polluting diesel-powered heavy trucks as part of the state's effort to reduce air pollution and climate warming emissions.
Great.
President Biden was in Minnesota this week to tout the announcement by heavy truck engine manufacturer Cummins that it will invest $1 billion in making low to zero carbon engines for trucks. Cummins manufactures nearly half of medium and heavy duty trucks in the U.S.
Instead of relying on equipment made overseas in places like China, the supply chains will be again made in America. They'll begin in America.
I'm sure Republicans will figure out some way to complain about that. Two.
More good news. The Biden administration this week also released a tranche of $500 million in new funding to build clean energy projects at the sites of current and former coal mines using funds from the landmark Inflation Reduction Act.
Nice.
The Environmental Protection Agency this week proposed tightening limits on toxic mercury pollution and other contaminants from coal-fired power plants that cause heart attacks, cancers, and brain damage in children.
Also nice.
And finally, the EPA also announced it has identified more than 9 million lead water pipes across the country in the nation's first ever tally that will help determine where and how to allocate more than $6 billion in new funding for drinking water upgrades. The EPA tally shows that Florida has the most lead pipes.
All of this helping people is outrageous. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
That's catchy. Chair dancing. Yeah, we've got about 45 minutes left in the program. If you want to jump in and engage in conversation, you're more than welcome. And I want to find that story about the Biden administration and the repurposing of old coal mines. That would be interesting to read. Wonder if any of them are old mountaintop removal sites. And by the way, going back to giant-headed Charlie Kirk, Micah says, I'm curious what we're supposed to do to defend ourselves against a tyrannical government that has F-22 stealth fighters armed with flying precision-guided Ginsu knives. Just saying. Yeah, me too. Never seems to dawn on him. Oh, and back to Harlan Crow. Yeah, the guy who gave $500,000 vacation to Ginsurrectionist and Fappy. Nydia just sent this along. Why am I not surprised? GOP billionaire who funded Clarence Thomas's vacations has also given thousands of dollars to Kyrsten Sinema and Joe to the mansion born. Of course, because wherever there's corrupt billionaire money to be had, you'll also find Smiling Joe. It's almost like it's some sort of, I don't know, symbiotic relationship or something. Thank you, Nydia. Oh, where to next? I did see an article earlier today pointing out that some of the Democrats are making an alliance of sorts with the Feedum carcass, specifically for the purpose of making Kevin McCarthy's life miserable, the weaker speaker. It all has to do with the House taking up the Senate's approval of the rescission of the Iraq War Powers, you know, that piece of shit piece of legislation. The AUMF, the authorized for, yeah. And they point out that, well, in the House, that could put significant cracks in the foundation of the weaker speaker's power, which would be delightful. Another report indicates that there's a bit of a GOP meltdown taking place after what happened in Wisconsin, in which Janet Protasiewicz whipped Dirty Dan Kelly by some 11 points. Politico reporting that the GOP is in a full-blown freakout, noting the Wall Street Journal's editorial board said that the Wisconsin election was a five-alarm fire, and said in no uncertain terms that the Republican Party had better get the fuck away from the abortion issue. You think? Even as, of course, down in Florida, Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis is eager to sign off on a 6-week ban on abortion. Good. I hope the freak out continues. I hope it really, really hurts. A lot. Then there was the arrest yesterday in Bucharest, Romania, of an American, a dude named Robert Rundo. He founded and led something called the Rise Above Moment. They're based in California. They are accused, among other things, of inciting riots. They were there in Charlottesville in 2017. And Robert Rundo is wanted by the United States government for what he did. Allegedly conspired with other people to go to rallies of a political nature and use combative tactics and commit physical violence against individuals and groups he didn't like. This is, well, it's become a thing for for white supremacist misogyny. And remember, the Venn diagram of white supremacists and misogynists and Nazis and men's rights activists and transphobes and incels is practically a circle. And that one report some time back pointed out how easily it is to, for instance, recruit an incel into white supremacy. And this dude fled to Romania, probably because he was a big fan of, who's that rabbit-faced freak? Andrew Tate. Dumbass. Who is still in detention. He's on house arrest now. But now Robert Rundo has been chased down by the Romanian authorities, and he'll be coming home to face justice. Because Romania and the U.S. do have reciprocal extradition treaty obligations since 2008. Robert Rundo is one of those very fine people that Nitwit Nero cited as having been present in Charlottesville in 2017. One of my... I've respected him for a very long time. A member of Congress, represents a district in Memphis. His name's Steve Cohen. And he has... made no bones about how upset he is watching Tennessee maggots tear the state to pieces and watching the expulsion efforts in the Tennessee House. He showed up on MSNBC. And you can hear the sincerity in his voice.
And it pains me, and it almost brings me to tears to see what's happening. This is just disgrace upon the legislative process. It's a disgrace upon the General Assembly and a disgrace upon the state of Tennessee. These three individuals violated the rules, and I believe in rules, and I never, I would not have done what they did, but there's a different time and a different place and a different history. But nevertheless, being that it was in light of the shooting at Covenant Presbyterian School, I do think the speaker, and I wrote him and asked him to consider that and to give a lesser punishment. They could do a censure. They could do something about committees, but they should not disenfranchise these three individuals. They represent people. They've been elected. They will have caused special elections to be held. Two, a primary and a general in each of their jurisdictions, which is six elections, which is an expensive cost to the taxpayers. They don't care. This is power run amok. They're drowning in their power, and they're not thinking of the results. The results are they're making these three individuals heroes in a lot of people's eyes, in their district and in their communities, because they're standing up on principle and they're being
and in the country.
Truly the best of the legislative process. Speaking the truth and trying to do what John Lewis called good trouble. We in Congress got down with John Lewis on the floor to protest gun violence and held the floor for a goodly while. It was understood this was special and it was John Lewis. Nothing happened. I mean, they threatened something. But that's what they're doing here. And after what happened at Covenant, we don't need more thoughts and prayers. We need laws concerning who can possess and wield an assault weapon. That's what's killing children. That's what's killing Americans. And it didn't used to happen. And they're going the other direction. They're trying to right now in the Tennessee General Assembly to say that people can carry without any background checks, without any gun courses, without any passing of a gun course to show that they know what they're doing with a gun, that they can carry a rifle on the streets with impunity and without the police being able to stop them. And I presume it would go all the way to an AR-15 because they're trying to change it from handguns to firearms, and they say that's part of constitutional carry. It's just gone. It's run amok with what they're doing, and the NRA is behind it all. And what they proposed as legislation, which I think they passed today, is just Band-Aid stuff about school guards and mental health, and all that's fine and good. But the problem is the guns and the automatic weapons that these people who are mentally ill get and go and kill with and kill lots of people with. And they, fortunately, this individual only killed six people, could have killed a lot more. But the six was too many. And that needs to stop. And the way to get to there is to see that those type of weapons don't get in the hands of people that shouldn't have them. Somebody's got no criminal record, has no mental health problems. They want to go out and shoot on a range. So be it. Want to go shoot the country. Let them do it. But the others should not get guns, and they shouldn't be able to carry them in public.
Congressman, you said that you would not have broken the rules when legislated out of having a voice or the ability to speak or the ability to give voice to your constituents before all of the victims of a mass shooting at an elementary school in Tennessee have even been buried. What would you have done?
Well, I had situations to where I stood up as well. And I was put off the House floor once for going over there. And there was a day when the Democratic Speaker of the House went and got with his group of his leaders and told them about five or six bills I had that were liberal bills on drugs and other things. And that she said, today we're going to get Cohen's bills. And they got my bills and they killed all six of them on the last day of session. And I didn't have a tie on and they kicked me off the floor. I mean, I know what can happen in there, and it was old Democrats and it's new Republicans, and they have no concern about new ideas or people speaking up and speaking in a different level, in a different issues, and have different opinions than the majority have. And the majority is basically a rural, very conservative group that doesn't really respect the people that are in the cities. Memphis, Nashville, Knoxville, and Chattanooga all have some pockets of blue portions of them, and they don't respect that at all.
Are you embarrassed to see your state on the world stage like this?
Most embarrassed. And I served 25. I look at that Capitol. I spent 25 years serving in that Capitol, and I was proud of a lot of the things I did. I was the one they went after oftentimes.
Yeah.
But I was proud of my service, and it's been disgraced today. Totally disgraced. And it is akin to a legislative lynching. Mm-hmm. And they picked the fact that there were two African Americans and a woman. And I know Gloria Johnson has been a fighter and a rebel in Knoxville and on the floor of the House. She speaks her mind. I know Justin Pearson. He was my intern and I supported him in his election this year in a fulsome manner. He's a star. He's a young Barack Obama. He's got great speaking ability. I never had known about Justin Jones. He was phenomenal. I was amazed at him, but I know he's done some things in Nashville that's raised the ire of the people in that legislature because he's been out an activist in the community, which they're not in favor of. The people that they're picking on are perfect foils for them in their districts that do not have black representation and probably don't have women. And if they have women, they don't have feminist women, aggressive, out. Truth-speaking women like Gloria Johnson, and so they're perfect foils for them, and these legislators apparently have no concern. I imagine the vote's going to be the same on all three of them. It'll be 72 to whatever, and it's just sad that they're not listening. I think that the attorneys, there are members of the General Assembly, John Mark Wendell and Bob Freeman, have done an outstanding job in presenting the case for Gloria Johnson, that the resolution, which is in essence your bill of particulars or your charging instrument, is defective, and it is defective, but I'm afraid they're playing to blind eyes and deaf ears.
Congressman Steve Cohen of Tennessee, thank you very much for joining our coverage. Mallory, let me come back to you.
Told you. The thing about Justin Jones and Justin Pearson, Gloria Johnson, is they speak with moral authority, and it's like garlic to a vampire to the maggots in that legislature. They cannot stand to hear their cynical bullshit called out. It burns them. It does. And it is the most valuable thing that can happen with these maggots. Make them uncomfortable every day, everywhere. as they called upon Justin Jones to explain what no action, no peace means, or the more traditional form, no justice, no peace. And he did it masterfully. Explaining that the idea comes from the book of Jeremiah. And says that basically that says there can be no peace in a community if there is no justice. It's not that the people who don't receive justice are going to make things unpeaceful. It is that a state of non-peace exists where justice does not. I'm proud of those three. And I don't know what kind of, if the charging instrument was defective, can a court hear that? I don't know jurisdictionally if they can. Another piece of news about the unfolding massive corruption of Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Fappy Thomas. Yesterday, Senator Dick Durbin, who chairs the Senate Judiciary Committee, said that the committee will take action with regard to the corruption, the wholesale, manifest, utter, complete, total, vile and vulgar corruption of Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Fappy Thomas. Durbin said the highest court in the land shouldn't have the lowest ethical standards. Oh, damn, that's going to leave a mark. Maybe Sammy Bad Breath can shake his head no some more. Today's ProPublica report reveals that Justice Thomas has for years accepted luxury travel on private yachts and jets and a litany of other gifts that he failed to disclose. That behavior is simply inconsistent with the ethical standards the American people expect of any public servant, let alone a justice of the Supreme Court. The ProPublica report is a call to action, and the Senate Judiciary Committee will act. The problem is, I mean, they'll do something, they'll hold hearings. But what needs to happen has to happen in the House, because that's where bills of impeachment originate. Even a former Republican is calling out Fappy. Former Virginia Representative Dave Riggleman today said, "Our country is poisoned from within. Ethics be damned." And with his wife, Ginny, being a major GOP influencer with multiple organizations that funnel and accept money in GOP circles, and certified Q quack, there's a new term, Clarence Thomas should not be allowed anywhere near a judicial decision. From J6 to yachts, we have to fight the rot. Oh, that's nice. That's right up there. If the glove doesn't fit, you must quit. From J6 to yachts, we have to fight the rot. Well, from his lips to God's ear. So let it be written. So let it be done. Oh, and this from Claire. Lead pipes in Florida. So it's been found the state with the most lead piping is Florida. Well, exposure to even low levels of lead can have great risk to brain development, and those people who survive severe poisoning, especially as children, may be left with intellectual disability and behavioral disorders. Not wishing to underplay the seriousness of lead poisoning, but could there be a link here to the origin of Florida Man? Not saying, just saying. I was thinking the exact same thing, Claire. Kind of explains a guy who would, I don't know, try to rob a liquor store by menacing with an alligator. And we know what the poisoning did in Flint and continues to do. And then this was a bit of a gut punch today. And we've been having a few of these periodically with the Biden administration lately. The Willow decision at Interior about drilling on the Alaska's North Slope, a recipe for disaster and an existential crisis all rolled into one. Well, here's another one. I saw this earlier today, and it did. It's like, really? At one point, we were kind of proud of saying that Joe Biden was the most, and I guess he still is, the most trans-positive president we've ever had. But somehow this is deliberate. You know, there were policy decisions made. Today, thank you, Darlene. Today, the Biden administration caved. Folded like a cheap suit. The Biden administration education department has proposed a rule, a change in the rules, that lets schools enforce restrictions on transgender student athletes. You know, little 12-year-old girls like Becky. If there's an upside to this, there is a categorical ban on, or there is a declaration against categorical bans on students participating on sports teams at all, trans kids. Public notice from the Department of Education said the proposed rule would establish that policies violate Title IX when they categorically ban transgender students from participating on sports teams consistent with their gender identity because of who they are. The proposed rule also recognizes, and this is the gut punch part, particularly in competitive high school and college athletic environments, some schools may adopt policies that limit transgender students' participation. So they're knuckling under to the anti-trans athlete panic. The Secretary of Education, Miguel Cardona, said being on a sports team is an important part of the school experience for students of all ages. Today's proposed rule is designed to support Title IX's protection for equal athletics opportunity. We welcome and encourage public comment on the proposed regulation and will continue working to ensure Title IX's effective protection for all students. Good God. So, there's the outright bans. Okay, we're going to oppose those. Biden administration is. But if they want to come up with other forms of bigotry and discrimination, that's cool. Like saying that a kid can practice with the team, but not actually compete. There's 30 days of public comment on the rule before it goes into effect. Department of Education says, for older students, especially at the high school and college level, the department expects that sex-related criteria that limit participation of some transgender students may be permitted in some cases when they enable the school to achieve an important educational objective such as fairness in competition and meet the proposed regulations' other requirements. Not a word in here about little trans boys. No. Once again, it's all about the trans girls. Unfair advantages! Bullshit. Lambda Legal said they're concerned about whether the proposed rule can properly eliminate the discrimination that transgender students experience due to the pervasive bias and ignorance about who they are. Given the importance of the opportunity to participate in athletics to students' educational experience, we look forward to submitting comments and working with the administration to further remove those remaining bigotry-based barriers to full and equal participation by transgender youth. That was from senior Lambda legal attorney Sasha Buckert. All this talk about unfair advantages, when in fact the very nature of athletics is to build unfair advantages. It is unfair. It is inherently unfair for someone who is, say, 7 feet tall to be able to slap down every shot that a 6'1 point guard tries to put up. But we recognize that it's part of the process. And once again, a reminder that a trans girl on puberty blockers probably has less testosterone in her system than the cis girls with whom she's competing. That's just a fact. Guarantee you that every cis woman listening to my voice right now has more testosterone in the system than I do. Just chemistry. I warned you about this, Darlene says. Joe has a lifelong pattern of pulling the rug out from underneath you. I said that he would eventually do this to the trans community. I saw it coming. He's clueless to this pattern. I don't know how much of it to attribute to Joe and how much to attribute to people like Miguel Cardona. Or how much to attribute to campaign strategizing. It's probably a little bit of everything. And, by the way, Nitwit Nero is out calling Fonnie Willis a racist again. Saying that it's her investigation of his attempt to overthrow the election was political persecution. Well, Fonnie Willis was asked about it and said, I don't have any comment on what his opinions are of my investigation. Because what Nitwit Nero had said on Tuesday after he was arranged on his indictment.
They've got a local racist Democrat district attorney in Atlanta who is doing everything in her power to indict me over an absolutely perfect phone call.
The perfect, perfectly crooked. Fonnie Willis went on to say, the comment does not concern me at all. It's ridiculous in nature, but I support his right to be protected by the First Amendment and say what he likes. People have that right to say whatever they choose to say, as long as it does not rise to the level of threats against myself, against my staff, or against my family. Right answer. And notice that she didn't, anything he says can and will be used against him in a court of law, so there's that. And Mark Meadows also got told by a court to go shit in a hat. Joy in Ann Arbor posted that, and I laughed for several minutes. Jeff Tiedrich on Twitter is just life-saving in some, but just sanity-saving at least. Appeals court tells Mark Meadows to go shit in his hat. That's perfect. He's going to have to testify.
Just the mental image. Hey, Meadows, go shit in your hat. Case dismissed. I take my little giggles where I can find them.
And then there's, you know, the marked safe function on Facebook? Marked safe from having my feelings hurt by a beer can. Hey, Kanda.
Sofa King. Maggots. Sofa King stupid. It's Sofa King.
And just a reminder that nowhere is particularly safe. Out in Oregon, well, the folks at Alliance Defaming Freedom are on the move. A woman with 5 kids wanted to adopt a 6th and 7th. She wanted to adopt a pair of siblings. So the kid, you know, because there's a preference for keeping siblings together. There's only one problem. The state of Oregon requires certification for adoptive parents. And they require that adoptive parents sign off on the rules. The Oregon Department of Human Services requires, in as a function of those rules, that an adoptive parent respect, accept, and support the sexual orientation, gender identity, and gender expression of children. Meanwhile, over at the Alliance Defaming Freedom, that filthy little tax-exempt fraud. Remember, it's a fraud. They were caught colluding. Anybody who cares to read about their activities with regards to women's reproductive health, trans rights issues, yeah, they conspire. And they admit that this has nothing, and I mean, this is proven. These are facts. They admit that what they want has nothing to do with any scientific concern or medical concern for children or women or anyone else, that they are motivated exclusively and entirely by a level of theocratic fascism that is absolutely putrid. So Christina Kiefer is a pettifogger, a senior counsel at the Alliance Defaming Freedom. She's a piece of garbage. And she said, Oregon is putting ideology and politics over children. No, Oregon's trying to protect the children from the shitbirds like the Alliance Defaming Freedom represents, who would do horrible things to children who might be gay or trans. Who, by virtue of being in the adoption pool, have already been harmed and rejected by their birth parents. And I don't know what the orientation is, if this horrible, maggoty, transphobic woman, homophobic woman, wanted to adopt the siblings, and one of the siblings was gay, or one of the siblings was trans, or they were both gay, both trans, I don't care. And she says, I reported to my certifier because they really emphasize the sexual orientation and gender identity training that you have to support it. I emailed her and told her I couldn't do that because of my faith. And then we had a phone call, and because I wouldn't take a child for cross-sex hormone injections, I was basically told that I'm ineligible to adopt in the state of Oregon. Yeah, lady, because you won't take the kid for medically necessary treatment. Probably want to pray the gay away or pray the trans away. So I'm sure Oregon's going to get sued. The aforementioned Christina Kiefer, the dirtbag senior counsel for the Alliance Defaming Freedom, who sucks and is a liar and a perpetrator of fraud on the court. Well, Christina Kiefer went on and said, Oregon says that it welcomes people from all cultural and religious backgrounds to adopt unless they disagree with the state's gender ideology. See, that's the thing that drives me bananas. Gender ideology. Here I am, trans AF, been that way for over 2.5 years, and nobody's ever yet sent me the trans ideology manual yet. I mean, I'm just figuring out as I go. I mean, my daughter got me a blue, pink, and white shark for my birthday, so I checked that box off. Still don't have any ooh woo stripey socks or cat ears. Damn it! Barring Jessica and other parents from adopting just because of their religious convictions clearly violates the First Amendment. It's wrong, and it hurts children who need a forever home. You nasty woman. Children don't need a forever home in a home where the forever is probably going to kill them. Children don't need a forever home where the space they live in is a closet. What a horrible person. Jessica Bates and Christina Kiefer. Spare the rod and spoil the trans child. Let's beat some cis into them. So the lawsuit was filed on Monday. And it says that the Oregon Resource and Adoptive Family Training instructed potential adoptive parents to use a child's preferred pronouns, take a child to affirming events like Pride, or sign the child up for dangerous pharmaceutical interventions like puberty blockers and hormone shots. Horseshit. It's a fucking lie. Just once, now that we know that the Alliance Defaming Freedom is nothing but a chop shop full of people who practice fraud upon the court, just once I would like to see the opposition in one of these suits answer the damn suit right off the bat with a motion for Rule 11 sanctions and dismissal. The Alliance Defaming Freedom has enough money to burn a sopping wet herd of sopping wet elephants with sopping wet $100 bills. And a court needs to order them to give that money in the form of sanctions to these organizations that have to defend their frivolous goddamned lawsuits. Oh, well, okay, I don't feel so alone now. Thank you, Cynthia. Cynthia in the Bay Area says, hey, I've been waiting for my trans ideology manual since January 1996. I certainly never got mine. Still waiting. Frustrating, isn't it? I mean, a kid, Cynthia Kids. But it's, you know, it's sort of along the lines of the gay agenda that we've heard about for 30 years. There is none. There's a subtle, and it's deliberate, there's a subtle thing that happens whenever you hear ology, ideology, or ism attached to something that describes someone's entirely human experience. It is dehumanizing. We go from debating the rights of LGBTQ plus people who are people, human beings, to calling it an ideology. As if you get up every morning and pledge allegiance to the trans flag. I mean, well, I do, but I'm kidding. But when you turn it into an ideology, it becomes something that can be philosophically attempted to be delegitimized. Which is a way, in short, of delegitimizing the people themselves. And so suddenly we're talking about philosophy instead of talking about actual human and constitutional rights. Trans ideology book, Lee writes, thank you for your order. This item is on back order. We will ship as soon as we can obtain more. Customer service department. Did you hear that, Cynthia? It's back ordered. Too much demand. And Jude says, as the program comes to a close, be affirmed, Robin. You've presented a multifaceted 3 hours. Good job, faithful servant. Thank you. Thank you. I'm on empty, or I would have joined you in dialogue. Wink. With kindness and love, Jude. Thank you, Jude. Three-hour Phil Robster. Yeah, sometimes these are kind of cleansing, you know? And thank you again to everybody who jumped in. Special thanks to Gino for the Have a Show on Me. Those don't happen a lot, but when they do, they're terribly, terribly important. And it makes tomorrow not nearly as terrifying. So we got down to $330 to go. That's just today and $30 of yesterday. That's huge. So that means tomorrow is 6:30. Manageable, I hope. Because there were a lot of, well, it looks like there's going to be still working on trying to get brakes and bearings done on the car and tires. New water heater. And then all the regular stuff. Already had to fill in the kidney-shaped, the pancreas-shaped Olympic-sized swimming pool. Solve off the Maybach and the Gulfstream 5. I'm sorry, it's a Bombardier, just like the Harlan Crow's jet. Right, Randy. Randy says, it's supply chain issues. It's the ink, it's the paper, it's the typesetting. Oh, just one more, since we were doing trans stuff. Just one more. Let me introduce to you Mitchell Thomas Whatley, a 47-year-old. Mitchell Thomas Whatley is an illustrator for children's books. He's from Alaska, and he creates sweet little images of mother and baby animals, like mama sea otter with little baby sea otter on her chest, mother wolf and her two pups. Well, his publisher, he's been canceled. His publisher has dropped him. He's got a preliminary hearing set April 11th in Juneau. He's been charged with terroristic threatening. He went around putting notes in businesses, allegedly, that showed an assault rifle superimposed over the trans flag. Gosh, I wonder what might have motivated him. And on the notes it says, feeling cute, might shoot some children. Good God. He illustrated books like I Would Tuck You In or You Are Home With Me. Just another terroristic maggot participant in the Great Panic. And
And, of course, Whatley made a reference to Audrey Hale after he was arrested. One count of terroristic threats gets you $10,000 bail, and then your wife comes and bails you out. In the criminal complaint, it says officers spoke to Mitchell, who said, in essence, that he was in fear of the recent transgender school shooter, but not in fear of all the cisgender school shooters, you know, the 2,890-some of those, and took it upon himself to print out and distribute these leaflets. So booksellers are pulling his books off the shelf. His publisher was Sasquatch Books, owned by Penguin Random House. They said they've ended their relationship with him. Well, maybe he can draw pretty pictures of mama otters and baby otters for, I don't know, Newsmuck or Fox News. Or maybe he can paint a wall mural at the offices of the Alliance Defaming Freedom. Alaska Robotics Gallery, via a person named Pat Race, said, whatever the motivation, we feel Mitch's actions were not consistent with our values or the values of our community. Christy Nami Erickson said that what he did is terrifying and transphobic. We have little patience for acts of disrespect, and we have no tolerance for hatred against marginalized groups. Members of the trans community are our community. She owns Kindred Post, a store in downtown Juneau. Why? Caitlin Shortell, a civil rights attorney in Anchorage, said the anti-trans rhetoric around the country has had an effect on hate crimes or attempted hate crimes like this one. And we've seen nationwide and in Alaska initiatives to discriminate against trans people in the name of protecting children, and I think this too attempted crimes like the one that we averted in Juneau. And then one other person, Emily Mesh, she chairs SEGLA, the Southeast Alaska LGBTQ Alliance, commented and said out loud what many of us know, that every one of these bills that's introduced in these maggot legislatures is introduced for one purpose and one purpose only. To make trans people die. Emily Mesh said the expected result is death. They're expecting that violence will come upon the trans community and some of us will die, and in exchange some of them will get a couple thousand more votes. And that's the deal with the devil that's being made, the environment and the dialogue that is happening on the national level. Put that fucker away for as long as the law allows. Now that's the program. So thank you. Oh, one more. Didn't say anything about Marginal Trailer Queen this program, so. Yes, she's part of hashtag Bud Light Butthurt. She lost her shit. She's mad at Nike and Budweiser and Jack Daniels. Never hire a man for a woman's job, she tweeted. Because Dylan Mulvaney is in a photo wearing a cute pair of Nike leggings. And then when Travis Tritt said, I will be deleting all Anheuser-Busch products from my tour hospitality rider. I know many other artists are doing the same. Name them, fucker. Well, Green said, God bless you. And then Travis Tritt got mad at Jack Daniels.
All of Jack Daniels' U.S. drinkers should take note.
I guess he's afraid that he's, if he drinks Jack Daniels now, the next thing you know, he'll have a feather boa around his neck and be mincing around in platform heels. Of course, he only noticed the ad after it was 2 years old. Marge said, noted. So that's the program. Thank you so much to all of our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this long-running conversation in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Roger. Steve, did you ever make it in? Don't know. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Like and subscribe the podcast, please. We're actually seeing results. Leave a comment. I know, I'm annoying. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Please stay safe. Get your booster. Go ahead. Get a flu shot if they're still around. Wipe down your surfaces. Still getting kind of cold. It's 52 degrees outside right now. 73 in the studio. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Wear your mask, especially if you think you're going to be anywhere near any maggots. There are some serious particle spreaders and spewers. Use your hand sanitizer. Maintain your social distance, 15 to 20 feet, like Paul from Parts Unknown says. And if you happen to be out and about and a shambling Supreme Court justice comes your way saying, there wasn't nothing wrong with that $500,000 vacation I got for free. I earned that shit. Avoid him. Avoid Fappy like the plague, because he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.